Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, 877-544-2580. Well, it's a real pleasure again to continue our special series honoring individuals that are really giving it their all to be part of the Tucson Festival of Books today here in Tucson. It's also important to recognize those who may not get so high visible representation. That's the people that make the books happen. Of course, we've just featured first in our segment with John Davis from Arizona Lithography, followed by Ted Larson from Night Horses. And I'd like to welcome here today to Jack Kulawick, who's a photographer that is known for his work that backs up the publication of wonderful books like we're here. So welcome to the show, Jack.
Oh, good morning. Thank you, Zara.
It's a real pleasure.
Nice to be here.
You bet. We're going to have some fun today. A brief introduction. Jack is a native of Chicago and spent his life in that part of the Midwest. He's a graduate of University of Wisconsin-Madison with a focus in visual communication, where he had the opportunity then to pursue his love and passion of the arts through a vocational school, eventually moving out west and enjoying the Southern California and up to Northern California coast, driving up into Oregon and settling into Seattle eventually. He was 4 years in Oregon in the advertising photography end of the business and then shifted into Seattle to do more of the same. And then in 1991, on another road trip, found his way here to Tucson, where he's been now for 20 years, eight of which working in film with another organization before he hung out a shingle to do his own thing now, where he's been in business since about 2001. There isn't an artist in town who doesn't know of Jack Kulawick, as well as many people in the photography circles, Jack, for the innovative things that you do, but really deep, true sense and understanding of the medium that you're working with as a photographer and that whole element of art.
Well,
isn't that the great way to start, right?
I've had the great opportunity to meet and work with some remarkable artists who've shared their gifts with me. Working with Ted and certainly with Bill has been a real gratifying experience.
As far as the art of Bill Mumy. Well, tell us back to those native Chicago days. Was it always in your makeup to pursue art?
Well, you know, I didn't really know what I was going to pursue, but one memory I have that's most vivid is my fifth grade teacher, Mrs. Woods. I always wanted to thank her for getting me involved in all this, because at some point she realized that math and science were not going to be, you know, my outstanding pursuits. So she recommended, if at all possible, my parents could afford to send me to the Art Institute. That would be a really good thing.
Oh, my gosh. And that's one of the crown jewels of Chicago, of course.
It was quite an experience for an 11-year-old kid. You know, I'd get on the L and I'd go downtown and get off the L and walk up Michigan Avenue and walk into the Art Institute. And every Saturday, I'd walk by all these amazing, amazing original bits of magic and art and sculpture and glass and furniture and just everything. And then I'd go into the school and I'd smell the smells, and I'd hear the sounds of art being made, and I'd see the people who were making them, and they were all like these really old people. They were like 20.
20.
And they were all spattered with paint, and they were wearing goggles, and they were like using acetylene torches, and it was just wonderful. It was just absolutely a remarkable experience for a kid like me.
So to see the young mentorship you got, both by observation, but also the instruction you got from these people then.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I wish I could remember, or I was aware of who some of the instructors were, because there were some really amazing people working in Chicago, always, but certainly in that time. And so after that, I tried to figure out a way I could stay somehow connected with the arts. And one thing kind of led to another, and I ended up getting an education in photography. Mm-hmm. And I worked at a vocational school doing what was used to be called slide tape presentations, you know, how to dismantle a bus transmission one bolt at a time, sort of like a visual car manual. And I did it for nursing and did it for all sorts of programs that this institution had.
Do you remember the first camera, though, you ever worked with?
Yes. Yeah, I was handed a Nikkormat in high school because the regular photographer for the newspaper wasn't available, and it was some sporting event. I think it might have been a basketball game. And the guy came out of the little press room and said, here, go take some pictures. I had no idea what I was doing. He said, just you'll be fine. And, you know, I kind of liked the feel of it, and I liked, you know, the brass of it, and I liked the glass, and I liked the dials, and I liked all of that. And
the nature of the equipment.
Well, that, and I looked through that little rectangle, and all of a sudden, everything kind of came together. You know, my whole world had that rectangular format, and it was my power, my privilege to be able to arrange things within that little framework. You know, probably a lot like painting, except, you know, it was the moment.
The moment, yeah.
It was just that moment. The decisive moment. So, kind of wandered out to the West Coast, had a wonderful opportunity to study with Ansel Adams. And that pretty much did it.
That did it for you. What was he like to work with? With Ansel Adams?
One of the things that attracted me particularly to Ansel Adams wasn't so much the nature of his work, which is, you know, unsurpassed as far as that goes. I wasn't out there, you know, doing another Half Dome. But it was the craft of it.
Yeah.
It was the technique, the mix of art and science that really appealed to me, and so I had that opportunity and I took advantage of it, and pretty much been photographing ever since.
And is for those of us, of course, that follow Ansel Adams' work, which I happen to dearly love you really become. I loved how animated you got talking about you control what's in that square.
Yes.
But that control really is meaning you manage light, right? Or you manage space.
Well, I manage light. I try to put things where they should be, given what I'm seeing. I don't really manipulate anything. I just try to frame things the way, you know, I think, you know, they look good to me. It's kind of an intangible thing.
Intangible.
It's hard to describe.
Jack, fast forward now perhaps to where you've been in this most recent period of your life and your profession, maybe the last 10 years. A lot of your photography work is indoors, is it not?
Yes, it is.
It is. So the move from being an outdoor photographer to an indoor photographer, are there challenges involved in that?
Well, what I do in the studio is much more controlled. I actually create the situation. If I'm doing a three-dimensional piece, a piece of sculpture, ceramic, some jewelry, I light it. I try to bring out, you know, the best qualities of the work for the artist. I feel that's my responsibility. When I photograph two-dimensional work, my responsibility there is, number one, to render it as accurately as I can, given, you know, the limitations of the materials, whether it's film or digital, because there's always, you know, inherent limitations. When I do, I do sometimes work for galleries and museums, and I do installation photography, and so that gets me out of the studio and into an environment that's a little more under my control, but yet there's a spontaneity to it because I really don't know what I'm walking into until I get there.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, it's a matter of composition. I mean, it's all basically elements of the same.
If I understand correctly how you do what you do, though, of course, it isn't just capturing the image, let's say a two-dimensional painting. It isn't just the image itself, but then understanding the interaction of the matting or the frame or the other environments, that those things can compete with one another, can't they?
Yeah, which is why I generally prefer to shoot art, you know, unframed, unmatted, and preferably not under glass.
Okay.
No, I just, because of the end purpose of this can be anything from reproduction, in a book, a limited edition print, website, any number of different places where this is going to end up. A lot of the work ends up in magazines like Southwest Art, mm-hmm. Art of the West, magazines like that.
Well, in fact, you did fabulous photography of Ted Larson's Damascus steel knives.
Well, thank you very much. I did very much enjoy that.
I
very much enjoyed that project. I love those things. My background in Northwest was advertising photography, so I did a lot of stuff. Things, handbags, shoes, furniture, every stereo cassette deck and turntable that was probably produced during those times. But never people.
Never people.
Never people. No, never people. It takes
by
a certain
your own choice? Or?
Yeah, pretty much so. Very rarely will I photograph people because you have to have a certain affinity towards that type of work. And I prefer, you know... things.
Setting the stage around those things for
pretty
their
much,
value
yeah.
and characteristics.
Yeah, they don't perspire.
They don't perspire, well said. Well, you, of course, have been in this field for, you know, 35 years.
Yeah,
I
know.
Of course, the biggest changes in the field, I would have to imagine, is, you know, can you even buy film these days, right?
Oh, yeah, I still buy film. I still buy film, not very much like I used to. It's been an interesting dynamic with the conversion to the digital. You know, I refer to film as the old days, which is actually just about 10 years ago, more or less, where most everything was shot on film. Digital was kind of coming on to where now, I tell people, I said, back in the old days, I would spend 50% of my time behind the camera. I'd probably spend another 35% of my time in a dark room, of all places. Mm-hmm. And then another, maybe 15% of my time either, you know, trying to get people to pay me or, running away from people I owed money to.
That's right. But you can see that it was in the actual shooting, but then all the magic you perform in the dark room. So now today, you still do some of that, I assume, but with the advent of digital, part of that dark room is now the computer, is it not?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, there's a product called Lightroom. Which is a digital version of
Darkroom,
effectively, and Photoshop, of course. And it's a great tool. It's a phenomenal tool. Just the things that I can do with a mouse click or two and some tools in Photoshop would take half a day to do. And so as far as looking at it from a production point of view, you know, the digital has just completely changed the whole complexion of photography.
So
on every level, not just in what I do, but certainly in photojournalism especially.
Sure, photojournalism. I get a sense, though, that there isn't this artist inside of you that's screaming, Jack, you're not being authentic because you're using a computer. Instead, you capture that voice as it's yet another tool or a mechanism for you to even do higher level work. Did I catch that right?
Well, the craft is the same. It's a tool. It's just a matter of applying the tools, knowing what the end result, we're after is, and using the right tool for the right job. It's changed, completely in terms of, my time. My time is now spent probably 70%, in front of a computer.
In the light room instead as opposed to the dark room.
Well, yeah, exactly. And so there's this intangible thing that is missing in digital. The creative part of it, looking through the rectangle. The rectangle is still there. And I still have to, make things kind of, put things or find things that fit that rectangle for me, that appeal to me. But It's way more, things I do now used to be done by a multitude of people in production. I had a background in graphic arts when I was still in high school. I had an opportunity to work at a printing company, which in those days was done very much the old-fashioned way. And now with the advent of, software that is available and digital production, one person can do the job of 10.
So as a solopreneur, you really can provide that beginning to end for your customers and your clients and probably expand your own bandwidth of capability.
I learn things all the time. I discover things. There's a lot of tools in the toolbox.
But, as an individual who are, and you are on your own and invest in your building, you've got a fabulous studio. I know we've got great skylights and natural light. But the fact that technology moves, how do you stay abreast of it? Do you have a community of other people that you kind of tap into regularly?
I have to say that it comes to me, it seems.
It comes to you.
It kind of comes to me. I read. I try to stay on top of, the information that's out there. But there's just so much. I mean, if I just tried to keep up with what's happening, I wouldn't get anything done. I need something, I look it up. I do a little research and make the call at that time.
I picked up a quote here recently. It goes something like, success is often taking a misstep in the right direction. So do you have any stories of things that were mistakes?
I'm the most successful person you'll ever meet.
Is that right?
If it's a misstep that made me that, yeah.
Is that right? So anything, any big ahas, you can remember those moments where you explored in something or tripped into something that really has taken your work in a new direction? Or your abilities to serve
clients? With my own personal work, not the business.
Yeah.
But my own personal work has been pretty consistent from almost the very first roll of film that I put through my very first real camera, which was a Pentax Spotmatic, which I happen to still own.
Oh, okay.
And it's a kind of a vision. Chicago is a big photography town, big photography city. And in the 60s, when I was coming up, there was so much in not just Chicago, but in the United States and in the world. Photography was just
really
everywhere.
Getting hot, yeah.
And I was drawn to it. The Art Institute has a great collection. And You know, I just sort of had this vision of how, you know, I look at things, and that's been pretty consistent. I just got back from Seattle a short time ago, and I found myself putting the same, you know, looking through that rectangle, and pretty much the same things were fitting into there really comfortably for me. So, you know, that's good for me.
Well, coming right after you here on the show, we're going to feature Bill Mumy, of course, in the book, The Art of Bill Mumy, and you were part and parcel a key player in this book, Jack. Congratulations. I mean, that Bill came to you with transparencies.
Bill came to me with a box of stuff.
A box of stuff.
Yeah,
so
Bill and Ted came in with a box of stuff.
What happened to get from the box of stuff to this beautifully bound book?
Well,
the role you played.
Well, my role basically was to take the material that was available, which consisted of every size conceivable of transparency. Imagine a big slide that's the size of an 8x10 sheet.
Okay.
Various qualities and conditions, 4x5s, 35mm slides, color Xeroxes, just a whole, you know, soup to nuts. And try to put it together the best way possible so that when John and the people at Arizona Lithographers got what I was done with, they would be able to put this wonderful thing that we have here today together. The big bonus was working with Bill side by side, because the art was gone. When I photograph artwork, I have usually the artwork with me,
there.
So I know what color that's supposed to be.
Okay, good point.
But in some cases, the color was completely gone. I mean, it was just nothing. And I remember sitting with Bill very often and saying, like, okay, so what was this thing supposed to look like?
And so how red was the real red,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. I remember, who was it, that portrait that we did? Who was it?
Coors, of Adolf Coors.
Adolf Coors, that's right. And that thing was just pink. It was just pink. And if you look at the book, you'll see we did some pretty amazing things. We were able to bring Adolf back. And so those challenges are always wonderful for me, wonderful, because I want to be able to produce, and this kind of goes back to my time with Ansel Adams, is to produce the best I can with the craft.
Yeah,
you know, it's not my place to interject too much creativity into it, because what I have to do is render it as best as I can.
To how it was really authentically intended,
right,
and
right,
as it was,
and
with all of its flaws and blemishes as well.
Absolutely, and the real payoff was being able to spend that time with Bill and listen to some really, really remarkable stories. The man has done, you know, two lifetimes worth of things in his life. You know, he's very blessed. He's very gifted. I feel very blessed for having had the opportunity to work on this project and to get to know Bill.
You
on a personal level.
And I'm sure our listeners are going to look forward to his segment coming up next. The prospect of you interfacing thus with so many talented artists throughout your career. I mean, it almost takes you back to those days when you were walking through the Institute of Art.
Oh, absolutely. One of the really cool thing about my job is that in any given day, I've got art coming in and art going out, and it's like a movable feast. It's just really wonderful to... you know, once again, have people share their work with me, and, you know, meet the people behind the work. They're just a great bunch of people, and I'm real glad that after, you know, all these years, Mrs. Woods was right, and you know, my parents, God bless them both, for you know, scraping the money together to put me on the L every Saturday when I was just a kid, and I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for all those things.
That's great. Well, I'm going to ask Bill this question at the beginning of our conversation coming up next. I'd like to close with it for you, Jack, and that is, so what is art to you?
Madison, Wisconsin, art was a window washer. You could get little bumper stickers. And he was actually an old guy on State Street who walked up and down State Street with a bucket and a pail. And whenever anybody asks me what art is, I said, art is a window washer, because I always remember this guy.
Art is a window washer. Isn't that
art? Art is something that... Some, oh boy, that is a really hard one. What is art besides a window washer? I know what artists are.
Okay.
For me, artists take the time to show the rest of us what we otherwise wouldn't notice.
Mm-hmm.
What art is what they do.
It's what they do. I like that. And many people don't know to appreciate that photographers are every bit the artist. And just as you said, you're controlling that rectangle. You're managing that light, that space, those
mm-hmm.
contrasts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a powerful tool.
Very powerful.
Yeah, it's a powerful tool. You know, it can change minds. It can change realities. It can change a lot of things. Or it can just make, you know, things nicer for people. You know, without art, the world would be pretty gray.
Yep.
So I'm glad I live in a very colorful world.
That's wonderful. Beautiful. So, Jack, what's the future hold for you and your work and your creative space and your business?
Well, you know, having worked with Ted on this project and the one with Alan previously, it's kind of opened up a whole new horizon, a field of opportunities and field of dreams for me. I like projects. I'm very project-oriented. And certainly working with Ted and you know, working with the artists and working with John and his people has really, you know, taught me a lot and exposed me to you know, some things about the business that I wasn't completely aware of, because very often when I do my job, it just goes away.
That's right. Yeah.
And I never know what happens to it. But I'm sitting here today and I'm looking at, you know, something that I had a bit of a part to play in.
Yeah, so huge part, in fact.
I look forward to working, you know, more with Ted and Night Horses in the future and seeing what happens after that.
Very good. Well, Jack, it's been great to have you here on the show. And again, for our listeners interested in getting in touch, it's Jack Kulawick, K-U-L-A-W-I-K, here in Tucson, Arizona. Would you like to share your business phone number unless we have someone
absolutely
who'd like to put this great man to work?
Absolutely. 520-404-4914. And I'm located downtown, right across the street from the main police station, in the pink building called the Labor Temple.
That's great. And it's just an experience to come and visit you in the studio.
Absolutely.
As well.
Feel free. Come by. Stop by. See how the sausage gets made, as they say. And, you know, we'll talk.
Very good. Thank you very much, Jack.
You're quite welcome. Thank you.
Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.